Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host for the week, Anthony Wood, and with me today is Mark Sessler, obviously friend of the show from NFL Network. Mark, thank you very much for joining us once again. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm wondering how you're doing. You know, we're fresh off the Monday night Texans affair, and you're attached to that team more deeply than I am, so I think I'm going to ask you the question.
I think my blood pressure has just about dropped to a normal level again. I think it's taken a good few hours, though, let's be honest.
Okay, take care of yourself.
But first of all, I mean, let's just kick it off right away. I mean, how do you feel about that result? Do you think it was a fair result at the end of the day?
Well, yeah, I do think it was a fair result. I mean, if anything, had the Saints lost and had lost in such close fashion as that game would have suggested, I think they could very much. I think one of the national stories we'd be talking about right now was the botched scenario at the end of the first half where the refs yanked 15 plus seconds away from New Orleans, forcing them into a long Will Lutz field goal that he missed. Now, had they, you know, been nipped by a point or two, I think that would be a massive storyline. I think it is to begin with, because the league is essentially, you know, in essence, acknowledged that they made a mistake there. And it was, that was bubbling up during the game. So I guess from a league standpoint, or from a less, you know, from a Saints angle, after what they've been through, you know, with the officials in their last game, obviously the way that ended in the playoffs, to this, for this game to end in similar and glorious fashion, you know, I think there's a small victory for football in general that New Orleans got out of there without that being huge headed. But it's another primetime issue where the officials cannot get out of their own way. From a Texans angle, it's a tough loss to swallow because of the way, you know, these games go. And it was an electric match. I thought it was a fantastic Monday Night Football game, and we needed that. And we need these Monday night games, which it's the 50th year of Monday Night Football. And I'm a bit older than you, but growing up, there were no Sunday night games for a huge chunk of time. And Monday Night Football was the biggest spectacle in sports. You know, I grew up on the East Coast in the New York, Connecticut area. The game would start at 9 p.m., and it'd be the one night a week when you were allowed to stay up late and watch the final result. And there were people on the East Coast last night after the second Monday Night game saying, it's 2 a.m. out here. We cannot have two games in a row. But they were both great games. If you're a Texans fan, it was an absolute heartbreaker, because for all the ups and downs they've been through, it looked like, you know what, we now have Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins in this cast of characters. No game is out of question. But the problem is, when you go into New Orleans, and we've seen it a thousand times, and they got a Saints team that was not really on their game early offensively. It was a strange game, and almost one that hadn't happened in years and years for them in terms of the low production on offense. And the Texans looked like they were in position to pull off this miracle finish, but you can never really count out Drew Brees, what he does at home. It almost wasn't surprising to see, because we've seen it from Brees and his crew so many times. And it raised, you know, some current concerns about how you play defense in that final minute. That's not the way you want to go out if you're Houston.
Absolutely, and that's one of the big question marks coming out of last night, is how do they move ahead from that relatively poor performance on defense? But I mean, if we look at the positives, the offense looked pretty good for the most part yesterday. I mean, what were your impressions of that offense on the night?
Well, I think that's one of the big victories, is that Deshaun Watson, you know, there's obviously a positive and negative, because he, to me, is finally surrounded with a cadre of weapons where you can say Duke Johnson looks like he fits in that attack. And that was an issue in Cleveland. They never really found a way to unleash him. And I would say that he was unleashed last night. But, you know, you're giving someone 13 touches. He amassed, you know, nearly 100 yards and had a couple big plays. I think it's going to take him a little bit of time to get in there. Kenny Stills, obviously, with that huge touchdown catch. So that's two guys that you've made a move for right away that are impacting the offense and seem to fit with Deshaun Watson. And, you know, him isolating him alone at quarterback and what he can do both on his feet and with his arm, he just seems to be getting better and better. And when you want to rank quarterbacks by watchability and excitement factor, he's constantly in the conversation in that top 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, I just think he gets more intriguing as a quarterback with each passing year. And when you put more around him, you know, it was nice. DeAndre Hopkins had another incredible game, you know, where they made issue of a couple drops early on. I really only saw maybe one that I would say, wow, we really should have had that. And it wasn't a perfect pass, you know, that one that went a little deeper and it fell to the ground. But I look at him and say, this is also someone that you have to talk about as the best receiver in football. And it's a week-to-week proposition with those kinds of conversations, but there's no way to stop him. So the Texans are very much a team in a weird AFC South right now. In that division, it's anyone's division, and the Titans came up strong. The Texans are right there. And I'd be a little concerned about what happened with Laremy Tunsil and, you know, the fact that that side of the line still saw a ton of pressure, and you got guys like Trey Hendrickson, you know, coming in off the edge over and over. But that stuff takes a little bit of time, too. So I'm not going to overreact off of week one. But you give up a lot, obviously, for this player. And for what you gave up, you want him to come in and play like a, you know, heading into his prime Joe Thomas.
Well, I mean, one positive coming out yesterday is earlier on today, Bill O'Brien said that first-round rookie Titus Howard has said that he's trending upwards. He could well be playing next week. I mean, do you think the addition of him to this line, whether it's at left guard next to Tunsil or perhaps at right tackle, how much of an impact do you think that could have going forward? And also, giving Tunsil a little bit more time, I mean, he's only been in the building 5 days. Do you think perhaps we're being a bit hard on him?
Oh, I mean, you know, as I mentioned, I think it's going to take a little bit of time for Tunsil to fit in. I mean, you're learning a lot more as an offensive lineman than any of us would even realize in terms of protection schemes and what's happening pre-snap. And for him to step in, you know, I think 5 days after he arrived in Houston, there were a couple moments where he looked great. And I think there's no question that Tunsil is a worth it. Very valuable left tackle guy to trade for. I mean, one of the better young bookends in the league. So it's not about what is Laremy Tunsil. That probably will take a little bit of time. And the thing is that it wasn't a final piece in the puzzle on that line, as we all know. I mean, the whole right side has issues. So to get anyone back helps. And it's just the project's not over. And they just haven't handled that project very well. It's been an issue for so long. And it kind of reminds me of the early narrative surrounding Andrew Luck, where it's like, you've got these weapons, you've got this great quarterback, but he's getting killed back there, and we've got to find a way to protect him. And, before the current front office took over in Indianapolis, that was something they just could not solve. They could not solve that issue. And Houston has gone to the extreme to address it. I mean, they've mortgaged the future, essentially, for someone that another team identified and drafted. My issue is that Bill O'Brien, who obviously is very involved in personnel matters and has clashed with multiple GMs over personnel matters and how stuff gets handled in team building, he's been there since 2014, and this is the state of the offensive line. I'm a Texas fan, and the last time you and I talked was about what's the GM situation. They just fired one. Who are they looking at? Well, it's no more fault. And if anything, you'd have to say some of these moves. Yes, it's nice to have Johnson. It's nice to have Kenny Stills, and it's nice to have Laremy Tunsil, but it's also nice to look down the future of this organization and say, if we're going to try to attract someone, come in and help build our front office and offer some sort of checks and balance scenario for Bill O'Brien. And I realize it's not just him alone. They made that point last night. He's not some king, you know, making, you know, all decisions alone, but he kind of is, because how many other people can you point to and say, oh, that's the person keeping Bill O'Brien in check? It just doesn't seem like a team where there's a lot of that going on, and the deals they've made raise eyebrows. And so who are you going to pull in and say, you're the GM we're going to give a long leash to, unlike everyone else? And by the way, you have no first round picks, and we've yanked a second away from you, and we have a head coach that's probably going to get super antsy and want to overinvest more draft picks to patch a hole that was not addressed previously. That's my concern with him. It's like, and on top of it, if Laremy Tunsil doesn't turn out to be a premier one, two, or three best left tackle over the next 5 years, this deal looks ridiculous.
And moving forward, obviously, you mentioned that O'Brien can be a bit antsy, and I think we've certainly seen that the last few weeks. He can be rather aggressive in the trade market. Do you think perhaps with the holes that we saw in the secondary and the offensive line, do you think maybe they re-enter that trade market once again before the season gets, we get too far into it?
I mean, they're about as unpredictable as a team is out there at the moment. But I would say no, because I don't know what more you have to give up. I mean, unless, you know, you can get certain types of like linemen with potential or players with potential for conditional or lower draft picks. But at this point, I mean, you know, especially if you're looking at offensive linemen, every team at this point is dealing with a 16-week battle from here on out, where they've got to find a way to stay healthy up front. And you're already seeing injuries all over the place. It's much easier in, you know, July and June and May to flip these players all over the place and try to figure it out when you get to camp. But now that the games have started and you're going to lose people left and right, I mean, we have, you know, I look at the Cleveland game, we lost two linemen, one to ejection, but then one to injury in the course of minutes. And if that happens to you in a game, they at one point had five actual offensive linemen. Had one more been hurt, you've got to move a tight end in there. You've got to move some sort of gigantic body in there. And you find out what happens on the other end of that, your quarterbacks get hurt. I mean, Deshaun Watson was clearly dealing with back pain last night, and he's still getting crushed. And so it's like, you know, and it's obvious, but the question's asked, how do you get this quarterback to last through 15 more regular season games and go into the playoffs healthy? I mean, he's been hit as much as any quarterback around, and it's just, you know, that's when your season goes utterly south and is totally capsized, the minute you lose that quarterback. We just saw that in Jacksonville, and it's like you can count on a couple more teams being stung in similar fashion, and you don't want to make it that your team is the obvious team to be stung because you have a quarterback not being well protected.
Absolutely, and that the six sacks he suffered yesterday, I think it was 11 QB hits as well. I mean, it was ridiculous, let's be perfectly honest. We'd all expected a lot better from this offensive line, despite the fact they're quite a new unit. But hopefully moving forward, it won't be quite as bad. But another unit the Texans really struggled in last night was the secondary. Aaron Colvin in particular, for me, looked poor, to be perfectly honest. I mean, what were your thoughts on that unit yesterday and how they performed?
Well, yeah, I mean, just the way that the Saints offense was able to come to life down the stretch and make huge plays. But I will separate, you know, this is not deep computer analytics or anything, but just the fact that any team going into New Orleans in prime time is going to, I would almost like say, let's put that away and let's start fresh and see where they are on a week-to-week basis. But it was concerning, and I just don't like any team that gets marched up and down the field on in 2 seconds. I'd say it was the same secondary that came out of that game with some overt concerns themselves. So it was just these two offenses that got hot, and that happens in football sometimes. And it's not easy to go patch up secondary in the middle of the season either, but they're going to have to roll with the people they have.
Absolutely, and I must admit, I was slightly surprised that they opted not to play rookie Lonnie Johnson instead of Colvin in particular. I don't understand why they didn't move Roby inside and put Johnson on the outside, but perhaps that's just me. Crennel clearly sees something that I haven't seen yet. So another player that I know we're slightly concerned about, I guess you could say, is JJ Watt. He didn't have the statistical performance yesterday that we'd expected from him, that we've gotten used to from him. He clearly had an impact. He was double-teamed almost all night, and he did pressure the play to go the opposite way. I mean, what were your thoughts on his performance, and should we be concerned at all, or was it merely sort of par for the course at this point in time?
I mean, the last time they played the Saints a while back, he went to town, and I look at the Saints as one of the better offensive lines. They poured a lot of resources into that, and it's worked. And that's so essential for Breeze, who is not Deshaun Watson on his feet at this point. And so, to me, it speaks more to the fact that New Orleans found a way, you know, over the past couple of years to make that an area of strength. And it shows in their ground game. It shows in the time that Breeze has had to throw over the past couple of seasons. So, when it comes to J.J. Watt, you know, there are things we can look at after Week One and say, big concern. And other things that we say, totally wait and see, and no judgment yet. And when it comes to J.J. Watt, I mean, I can't think of a player on the Texans or in the AFC that I would trust more to figure out how to get back on track. That said, he's not 26 years old, and he's been through a ton health-wise, and I think durability and overall production may be, you know, at this point in his career, always something to keep an eye on, but not to the point of being concerned after one game.
Certainly, and let's try and look at the positives, I suppose. One player in particular who really stood out for me on that defense yesterday was Whitney Mercilus. He had the sole sack of the night, sole interception of the night as well. He played really well overall in that sort of Jadeveon Clowney-esque spot, apart from perhaps a lack of production in the run game, but that's certainly not just on him. I mean, what are your thoughts on him and how he performed yesterday, and is that positive look going forward, especially given that Clowney's no longer in that team?
Had a big turnover too. I mean, when you're going to move Clowney, there has to be, from your position coaches, from the entire, you know, crew that runs the defense, a belief that someone can step in. It can't just be a complete and total void. And whether that's them, you know, kind of whistling Dixie and throwing themselves at some second-year player is going to step up. Whitney Mercilus has had a couple seasons where he's looked like a breakout type candidate, and then he's gone back to the pack a little bit. But last night he showed up, and that, he's in the role now. He's got the opportunity, as these athletes like to say, to step in and come that guy across from Watt. And it always helps when you've got someone, you know, occupying two or three offensive players. You know, that's three people on one. That should free up other people to produce. And so it's not just pressure on, but it makes sense that he would have more chances to impact the game. I mean, for me, he's done it before, so it's not a complete, you know, wild card situation. But losing Clowney, that to me is a huge loss. And I think that we always saw in Seattle, I mean, it wasn't like he dominated that game from wire to wire, but just like Tunsil, he stepped in, you know, having not even practiced all summer, and made an impact in that Seahawks game. It's a huge, huge absence in Houston's offense. When he's healthy and when he's playing the run-stuffing role that he does so well and offers pass rush. So it's Mercilus and others fill in the blanks that need to come in and make up for it, because that was the identity of this team. Even with Deshaun Watson, it was the Watt, Clowney, Romeo, Cornell defense that could absolutely turn games, you know, flip a switch and suddenly put Houston in a position to dominate someone. So who's going to do that in Clowney's absence?
And at the end of the day, what do you think was their undoing last night? What was the final straw, you could say?
I think it's just game flow, and you know the way that the New Orleans, who were, that offense was kept under wraps. I think they mentioned that it was their lowest output offensively going back to 1994 or something early on, and it looked early like it was going to be one of those games, a total aberration where maybe the Saints offense just went to sleep, but then they got completely hot, and I think you pointed to Houston secondary. You're on the road in a tough situation. I don't know what more you could have asked from the Texans offense, especially late when, you know, game on the line and they just fly down the field and score. It was one of these, for me, you know, with football, and I get to a point where it's like, I don't want to try to explain what happened in the final 10 minutes, because football sometimes just becomes magic. It's very human. And I know that, like, there's an analytics crowd that would say, I don't want to hear that as an explanation, but it's Monday Night Football, I think, which has a whole different sort of aura and spell casting type thing to it, where it just, this happened. This is in New Orleans. The place went crazy. And you've got a kicker you can count on. I think that one thing that I came out with, that I know that Will Lutz missed the one at the end of the first half, but they're one of these teams with a kicker you can count on. And, you know, the Texans missed the kick. And there's too many teams right now. It's become like the new quarterback thing, where there are always 8 to 10 teams without a quarterback, not even a functional one, turning games into lopsided nightmares. And now it's like it seems that that's been replaced by the kicker position, where there's 10-plus teams with such shaky situations at kicker that if you're one of these clubs that can actually realistically attempt a 50-plus yarder, that it changes everything. It changes what they had to do at the end of the game. You know, at one point they could have taken a timeout a little bit earlier and tried to get an extra play in, the Saints, on that last drive, but they trusted their kicker. Where if you're a team like, you know, the Jets, for instance, had to use their last-minute drive against the Bills, which totally didn't work, going in saying, we have to score a touchdown, even though we're down by 1 point, because we have a kicker we don't trust on any level. That changes so much, and it's such a weight on an offense. And I thought the Saints had such confidence on that final drive because they knew our dude can hit 50-plus yards in this dome. In this situation, he's done it before, he can do it again, and he did it, and bang, that's how the game ends.
Certainly. So at the end of all of this, do you think the Texans should walk away with their heads somewhat held high? Do you think there's enough positives to take away from this game that it wasn't a complete loss from their point of view?
I don't think it's a complete loss because I think a lot of people, well, from one angle, from a perception angle, a lot of, you know, the Texans have, not unlike the Raiders, some, I mean, to a much lesser degree, have been a bit of a laughing stock because of player movement and trades and people, you know, piling on Bill O'Brien. You very nearly beat the Saints on the road in the first game of the year. Had they done that, I mean, it would have been an absolutely titanic victory. They fell short, but they, a lot of teams go into New Orleans and get absolutely taken to pieces. That did not happen. You got things to work on. I think you can say that the blocking with Laremy Tunsil is going to get better, as we talked about. That is, I'm not ready to panic about that, and I don't think anyone should be either. And you played a great defensive line in the Saints, too. That is a rough and tumble front seven. So I think it's a small victory. It's a loss, but you can say this is a Super Bowl team that you went toe-to-toe with. What's not to like about that?
Certainly. And then finally, just to close out, I've got to ask, obviously we saw DeAndre Hopkins had a very hit and miss game. There were a couple of absolutely unbelievable plays and then a couple of drops, which we don't really expect from him. But then certainly towards the end, we had the Deshaun Watson interception followed by Hopkins, I suppose you could say WWE style tackle. I mean, what's your take on that? Do you think it was a flag?
No, I mean, it was definitely a flag. You cannot do that. And there's a reason you can't do that. And, you know, we've seen that in the past. And I tweeted about, like, when I was young, the first body slam that I ever remember. You know, it was a Jets or Giants game, and they cut away to this Packers-Bears game taking place where Jim McMahon, the Super Bowl winning quarterback of the Bears, and this was the year after, so it was 1986, and this guy, this Packers defender, who had he was wearing a towel. His name was Charles Martin. He had a towel with numbers on it, and it was apparently a hit list of players he wanted to take out, and McMahon's number was on there in the middle of the game. Seconds after McMahon had completed a play, this guy came in and just body slammed Jim McMahon to the ground, and he was lost for the rest of the year. And it was a flag, and I believe he was fined and suspended and all this business for doing that. And so there's a very clear demarcation line on the concept of, you know, I think that was actually a German suplex that DeAndre Hopkins performed last night. People were saying that it is not a body slam. So, you know, there were a lot of hot takers out there correcting the actual wrestling move, a German suplex. I don't think it's the kind of thing that any team would smile upon in any way. It's an immediate flag. It's kind of a situation that blows up the next day on talk radio and on television. So no, let's not try that again. Did I find it entertaining to watch? Yes.
Absolutely. Mark, once again, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much for joining us here on the Texans Talk podcast. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
On Twitter, just at Mark Sessler, M-A-R-C, S-E-S-S-L-E-R, and our Around the NFL podcast has shifted into the time of year from now until after Super Bowl, where we go every Sunday night, and we have a live show that will stream also on YouTube. It begins a couple minutes after Sunday Night Football wraps, and that's also on iTunes and anywhere else that you find podcasts. And then we also have a show, for instance, today, every Tuesday, and we have a preview show every Thursday that releases after Thursday Night Football wraps as well. So three shows a week. We do a ton of YouTube and video type stuff as well, and have a column up on NFL.com, and it's called On My Radar. So it's NFL.com/On My Radar. It will take you to the latest one. And this week we talk a little Jets, Browns, Baker, Darnold rematch coming up this next Monday night.
Thanks once again to Mr. Mark Sessler there. And today I've got joining me another special guest, Jacob Barner. Jacob from the UK, a friend of mine from back home. He is attempting to set a world record to do with the NFL 100th year. Jacob, thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm doing very good, thank you. Very warm down here.
Well, I mean, have you gotten used to the heat yet? Let's be honest, it's not quite the same back home.
No, I'm not used to it, if I'm honest. No, it seems to get more humid and hotter each place I go to.
Absolutely. So obviously you're down in New Orleans now. You've been to the you went to the game yesterday. Can you tell us first of all about the world record that you're trying to set here?
Yeah, so I'm trying to set the world record for the quickest time to watch a game at every NFL stadium. So the current record is 86 days. I'm going to be trying to do it in 84 days. So I'll be going to 31 stadiums. I'll be going to MetLife twice because I need to go see a Jets home game and a Giants home game. So I started in Chicago on Thursday and I'll be ending in Atlanta on Thanksgiving.
And so far you've been to what, three games, and out of those games, what have your been sort of highlights been so far? What have been the moments that really stood out to you most?
So yeah, three games I've been to so far is opening night, Bears Packers. I was at the Cowboys Giants game on Sunday and I was at the Saints Texans game last night. I mean, the obvious one is just last night's game. From, you know, start to finish, it was a great game, and that last 2 minutes I'll be very, very lucky if I'm able to see a game as good as that again on this trip. So that was incredible. And seeing AT&T Stadium, that was an absolute insane place, and I was able to go on the sideline pregame, which was really, really cool. And then the whole opening week in Chicago, all the build up to it and everything they were doing for that was incredible as well. So it's been a really, really good start first week.
Not a bad way to start your trip, absolutely. But I've got to ask, obviously you mentioned yesterday's game, what was the atmosphere like there, obviously, especially as it's so tight towards the end? What was the atmosphere like?
It was incredible. I've never experienced anything like it, if I'm honest, in the Superdome. Not just, you know, the last 2 minutes, not just third down, but every single defensive snap. That place is so loud. And it didn't matter whether the Saints were 14-3 down, as they were at one point, or whether they were 27-21 up. It was just as loud the whole way through, which is just it was a testament to their fan base, really.
And I saw beforehand, the game that there was, and you mentioned obviously before we started talking that there were quite a lot of Texans fans down there, and I'd seen on social media beforehand that there was a big gathering of them just before the game. And I saw a couple of English fans dotted in there as well with some Union flags. I mean, did you happen to bump into any British Texans fans or Saints fans for that matter?
I didn't. I did bump into two guys that were over from Wales, who I bumped into, funnily enough, in Chicago, and they were out here just for a week-long trip, and they've actually been at the same three games that I've been to so far, which is so weird. But yeah, you're right, there was quite a few Texans fans there. They were kind of dotted around, and then there was a couple of sections where they were all grouped together, so I'm not sure if maybe they all came together. But yeah, you saw them, and even just walking around the city, I've seen quite a few. So I suppose it's not far for a road trip out here, so it makes sense that this is one that they do.
No, by US standards, I guess it was a relatively close game. I guess for the likes of you and me, it was still a bit of a trek to get to, but I guess it's a completely different world, let's be honest. So sticking with the performance itself, I mean, what were your impressions of the performances of both Saints and Texans on the night?
Well, someone that impressed me a lot for the Texans was Carlos Hyde. We weren't sure what to make of this Texans run game, right, coming in after Lamar Miller went down, and then Duke Johnson comes in, and then Carlos Hyde comes in. And Carlos Hyde's always been someone for me who's, when he's played, has looked fairly good, but he seems to be bumping around roster to roster, never being able to find a home. And I wonder now, is this hopefully somewhere where he can impress? Because I thought he looked good, he looked hungry for the ball, and he was finishing off runs, etc. So I was very impressed with him. And for the Saints, I was probably most impressed with the offensive line as well as Alvin Kamara. But, you know, they seemed to be able to neutralize J.J. Watt quite well. And Drew Brees was rarely under pressure. There was a couple of times I think Merciless was able to get to him. But I think he largely was afforded that time to be able to do what he wanted to do, especially come the second half.
And do you think it was just that the offensive line was that strong, or was it perhaps a lack of pass rushing from the Texans, for a lack of depth, you could say, at the position?
It certainly could be. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from the Saints offensive line, because neutralizing, you know, Merciless and J.J. Watt's no easy thing to do. But it could have been the case, you know, you don't want to sit here and say, oh, it would have been a completely different game if they had Clowney. But you know,
but it could well have been.
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes it even harder because, you know, they can't just double team JJ the whole time, which I saw them do on a number of snaps. And it makes it easier for the offensive line, I suppose, to know where the threats are coming from when there's one less, you know, top pass rusher coming at you, really.
And I've got to ask, from a personal point of view, obviously from someone who was in the building, how poor did that secondary look from your point of view?
For the Texans?
Yes.
For the Texans. I didn't think it seemed more of a case of the Saints receivers really being able to find the holes in when it was zone and when it was man. It was almost just like this, they just couldn't win those one-on-ones, right? And it's not easy when you're going up against someone like Michael Thomas in those one-on-one situations. And it was probably the same on the other end with DeAndre Hopkins. You know, he was just winning everything after the right at the start against Marshon Lattimore. But I think a lot of the times, I think for a few of the touchdowns on both sides, it almost seemed like the play call was giving them a hard time to defend what they were trying to do. You know, you look at the Stills touchdown at the end, and you've got the Saints there with, you know, no high safeties in that situation. And then it's almost the same thing when it came right at the end when Drew Brees needed to just get 20, 30 yards to get into field goal range, and they were playing so soft they were just giving up that range that he needed when he probably wasn't going to go take a deep shot downfield when they only needed a field goal. So there's probably no need to have three safeties 40 yards, 50 yards deep.
Absolutely, and I must admit I may have berated Crennel ever so slightly in my article last night when I was reviewing the Texans defense for some of his play calling. Again, that soft secondary play really got on my nerves, I must admit. I don't understand the play calling there, but Crennel knows a lot more than I do, let's be perfectly honest here. So, I mean, going back to that Texans offense, I mean, what were your impressions of them last night, of the likes of Hopkins and Watson and Will Fuller as well, who came back from an injury?
Yeah, Hopkins, I mean, we all know what he can do, and his hands, you just get it in the vicinity and he seems to be able to catch everything. Fuller, we know what his speed is like, and I think there's probably at least one or two snaps a game where he will beat somebody deep. So if the offensive line can hold off long enough for him to get the ball, then that's a big threat to any defense. But the issue was the issue that we all know was going to be there, which was the offensive line. And there were some Texans fans upset that what looked like was going to be the game-winning sack for the Saints came against Tunsil, so they weren't very happy that this is supposed to be the new shiny piece that saved the offensive line. But yeah, Deshaun Watson was just under pressure a lot and took a lot of hits, and it's pretty tough. Even if you do bring in a couple of big pieces, you know, offensive line is a unit, and defensive coordinators will be able to find the weak link in that unit and take advantage of it.
Certainly, 6 sacks and 11 QB hits on the night is not what the Texans would have wanted, especially given how much they invested in that offensive line this offseason. Hopefully, from their point of view, they'll have Titus Howard and perhaps Max Sharping in the lineup next week, but only time will tell at this point in time. So you're seeing them twice more, if I'm not mistaken. Who are you going to be seeing them against and where?
I have them on the road to the Chiefs. So I'm expecting another very, very...
That's going to be a very good game.
Yeah, because the Saints are quite heavily favoured last night. And after the game I've just watched, I look at that and go, that's probably... I could see something similar with that one. And then the other time I see them... That's a good question. Oh, at home, of course. I have to do the home game. Yeah, so that will be in Houston at home to the Colts, which at the preseason I was looking at as a division deciding game, and then all the stuff happened with Andrew Luck and you were thinking maybe not. But I mean, you look at how they did against the Chargers in week one, and you know, they're not to be discounted, I tell you that much.
Certainly not, and especially, I must admit, I felt bad for the Colts this weekend, losing Devin Funchess with a broken collarbone, and obviously the Jags as well lost Nick Foles, the broken collarbone as well. I mean, there's been a lot of injuries this past weekend in that division. So who knows by that point in time who's going to actually be playing, but hopefully you'll get a very good game out of it. So this weekend, the Texans finally kick off in their division against one of their rivals. They got the Jags on Sunday, I believe. So what's your prediction for that game if you had to take a guess at this point in time?
I think the Texans have got to go into that feeling pretty good about themselves. I know they lost last night, but it was a great performance against what was probably the, you know, best team in the NFC, if not the the league last season. The Jags, like you say, you know, they've lost Nick Foles. That's good. That's a big blow to them, not just on the field, but also, you know, they invested all that money and time into it. It's gonna take a hit on their mentality. Hopefully, you know, Minshew can come in and play with that kind of confidence that almost Foles played with when he was coming in for Carson Wentz. But I think if you're the Texans, you've got to feel pretty happy that if you can lose the way you did last night to the Saints, you should be going into that game looking to win by two touchdowns at least.
Absolutely. So just to close out here, obviously I like to throw people off a little bit, but let's stick with the stadium theme, with the tour theme here. Which of the stadiums are you most excited about going to this year, and which would you say you're least looking forward to seeing?
Ooh, most very much looking forward to Arrowhead. I think I've heard really, really good things about the atmosphere. Lambeau is also up there as a stadium that I think I've just always wanted to go to. And then I'll go one more, which is the new Viking Stadium.
Certainly.
I've heard it's just incredible of, you know, of a building. So, and then least looking forward to is a tough one. I'd probably have to say Gillette Stadium.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think I've heard that I've heard it's not by any means like breathtaking like some of the others, and it's Patriots Giants, which I think they'll be such heavy favourites for that. It's not going to be like last night's tight affair or opening nights. It could just be quite a
bit of a blowout like we saw against the Steelers.
Exactly. If they can do that to the Steelers, God knows what they can do to the Giants.
Well, I must admit, I'm looking forward to seeing them against the Dolphins next week, especially once AB's in the lineup as well. Dear Lord.
I'll be at that one.
You'll be at that game?
Yeah.
Oh, that is going to be a massacre.
Yeah. They can concede 59 points to the Ravens. No disrespect to the Ravens, but if they can do that there, you know, we could see a basketball score.
It's going to be absolutely ridiculous. Well, obviously, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. We wish you the best of luck moving forward, and we hope you enjoy the remaining Texans games that you've got up ahead of you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Where can our listeners find you on social media so they can follow your journey?
On Twitter, it's just at JBBFootball, and that's the same on Instagram, at JBBFootball. Feel free to give me a follow or a message, or if you're going to any of the games, especially the Texans ones, just give me a shout and we can grab a beer, or if you've got any tips for while I'm in Houston or anywhere else, I'd be more than happy to hear some tips for while I'm in there.
Absolutely. And can I just say, when you are at Lambeau Field, I'll be very disappointed if I don't find a video of you cycling from the training ground to the stadium.
I will try my best.
Jacob, thank you very much for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've been your host for the week, Anthony Wood. Follow me on Twitter at ARWoodNFL. And of course, keep up to date with everything Texans at the Texans War of USA Today. Thank you very much for listening.